Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome back here to the Forcing Fire American Soccer Show. Normally, this would be a review after, of course, 90 minutes, but because of this weather delay that has hit Soldier Field in Chicago, we're not going to push the show back. We're going to go ahead and talk about what could be. Just recently, about a couple of seconds ago, Rob Stone from Fox Sports 1 has said that they're going to try to restart this match 11 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Central. They're squeegeeing the field at Soldier Field right now. we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen here. But joining me right now from SoccerByIves.com as well as NBC Sports Soccer, Matt Reed joins me. And Matt, you know, obviously we know that these teams, they want to get it over with. And we know that they want to go, and whoever's going to win this match will face Argentina in the final this Sunday at MetLife Stadium. But obviously there are some concerns, because if the field is not dry enough, the way it looks like it's not even going to get dry enough, you know, there could be some serious injury, and that could really play a factor into what the final could be on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It's. I mean, you and I were just talking about this off air. I think player safety should be the number one concern. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that you have to take into consideration here. You have the fans, obviously, who have been told not to re-enter their seats yet, as far as I know. I just saw that you have field crew out there trying to use squeegees to get the waterlogged field back. So it's relatively playable, but from what I see from the pictures that people have been tweeting, that doesn't seem too promising. So, like I said before, I understand that it's probably not ideal to push the game back till tomorrow, because Argentina is going to have an extra day of rest. These players aren't going to necessarily want to go another day just to play 45 minutes of soccer. But at the end of the day, player safety is the biggest concern. And the last thing you want to see is these guys go back out there and see a star like Jaime Rodriguez or Alexis Sanchez get hurt.
Oh, absolutely. We don't want to see that. And, you know, and there's some more pictures coming here. If you go also to the MLS match tracker, they're just pushing all this water out into the electronic ad signs. They're doing their best to get the field that's playable. I mean, I remember, not to go all the way back to 9/11 when it happened the next day, but, you know, when the old Yankee Stadium was up on 161st and River Avenue, I mean, they were supposed to play a big game against the Red Sox on that Monday evening, and the huge rainstorm that came really waterlogged the outfield, and I know it caused at least maybe 3 to 4 giant puddles throughout the entire outfield. And, you know, I was really hoping they were going to get the game underway, but unfortunately they had to cancel because, you know, so much rain came in, it waterlogged the outfield. I mean, I know it's different sport, apples and oranges, but still, the same thing here. I mean, we hope that, you know, if they can do a great job and get the field dry enough so it's playable, you know, kudos to them, but still, it just doesn't look like it's playable to me, and it doesn't look like it's playable to you.
No, it's definitely not. And I think the even bigger thing through this is that the players have been sitting out for what? We're going on close to 2 hours now since they've been out on the field. So you have to consider that they'll have to warm up. Or if I'm a player and I'm playing in this game, I want to warm up for at least a good 15, 20 minutes if I've been sitting down for the past 2 hours. I mean, you can really get tight just from sitting around for a couple minutes, but let alone this amount of time. So I think that's a big concern too. And that gets back to the injury concern. If you're sitting around for that long period of time, you're more prone to injuries. So I think that's another big concern. And I mean, maybe we will see them come back out tonight, but I'm honestly kind of hoping that they push it back till tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah. That's for sure, and hopefully they do play tomorrow afternoon. And I understand, like you've said, like we've already said, You hope that they do get underway because they don't want to give Argentina another extra day of rest here. But still, I mean, we'll see what happens. And hopefully, 11 o'clock Eastern, they will play the second half. No, there will not be another review show. We're just going to review the first half and talk more about what happened on Tuesday night. But I will say this, though, Matt. Chile was on point. Chile was basically – they put the foot on the gas pedal and they mowed down Colombia for those two goals to give them that 2-0 early advantage early in the first half all the way through to halftime. Fantastic goals by Charles Aránguiz and Jose Fuenzalida in the 4 minutes apart. Just amazing to see what Chile has done. And if you think about it at the same time, I would have to say that they're just restarting from where they left off against Mexico in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the biggest thing about them stopping play when they did, obviously, was at halftime, so they were going to be taking a break anyway, was that Colombia was starting to get into the game a bit more as the half progressed. Obviously, Chile got the two early goals, and they looked like the dominant team for most of the first half, but as the game kind of moved on towards halftime, Chile was getting more of the possession. They were getting more chances, not necessarily on goal, but it seemed like there could have been a chance for a goal. So I think, honestly, it probably hurt them more that they're having this extended layoff than it does for Chile. But yeah, I mean, it's what now, 13 goals in their last three games for Chile. I mean, attacking-wise, they've been on fire. They've been defensively sound. They really haven't been tested much in this game. They weren't tested at all against Mexico. So I think you're most likely in store to get the same final that you saw last year, and that's really not a bad thing. These two teams, Chile and Argentina, don't like each other at all. And they played a fantastic final last year, so I'm sure MetLife will be packed. Regardless of who's playing in the final, I'm sure it'll be packed. But if you get the rematch like it was a year ago, I don't see why the game won't be as hyped.
Exactly. I think that's the one thing. I mean, I've said this already. I am hoping that we're going to get this rematch of last year's final in Chile at MetLife Stadium because, you know, there's been some doubters with this tournament. There's been some doubters about why they're playing another Copa America the year after, and why this happened, why that happened. And, you know, I can understand why some people were thinking that, especially over in South America. But if this is going to be a rematch of Argentina and Chile in this Copa America, I mean, that's going to be a very, very interesting thing of what they're going to write about because, you know, then you can't say anything because you got two South American teams in the final. That's what you probably wanted. And look what's going to happen. Argentina and Chile could be those participants in consecutive Copa Americas.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, coming into the tournament, I had a little bit of hope. Not hope, but looking at Mexico, I thought that they had a good chance to make it to a final. But obviously that kind of got thrown out the window when Chile played them. But I mean, you always had to kind of imagine that these two teams would get together. I know they were paired together in the group stage, which wasn't ideal, but the fact that that happened actually opened things up more because they ended up being on opposite sides of the bracket. So I think this is probably the ideal final. When you heard the Uruguayan president's comments during the tournament talking about how the tournament was a disaster being in America. And I think he was honestly probably just being bitter because they lost their opening game against Mexico and they just didn't play well in this tournament. But mm-hmm. I mean, I think this tournament's been a tremendous success. And I think based on what I've heard, all the South American teams have enjoyed their time here. I mean, a lot of these places, especially MetLife for the final, I mean, New Jersey and this surrounding area has a very diverse culture. A lot of different Hispanic communities. So I think this is really the perfect place to have a tournament like this. I don't know if having it here every 4 years or whatever they're proposing doing is necessarily the way to go because I think teams like Argentina and Chile and Brazil still deserve to host this. But I don't see why they wouldn't want to come back here because I think this tournament's been great so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very, very successful. I mean, I would have to say maybe a slow start to the tournament
Yeah,
when
definitely.
it got underway, but it has been absolutely fantastic to see these teams really having some fun and going at it. And I agree with you. You know, look, I love how Uruguay plays. I think Uruguay is a very strong technical side in South America. We know about the flair that Brazil has. We know about, you know, the strength and the speed that Argentina has. I always love Uruguay, but I think it's that little bit of bitterness that always, I don't want to say slights them, but it feels like it does, because they have wonderful players, wonderful players. And unfortunately, I just think sometimes they create their own controversy for no reason.
No, I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. And that's honestly the funny thing about this tournament, is that when you talk about controversy and Uruguay, you kind of lean towards Luis Suarez because of what he's done in the past. He's obviously a fantastic player, but he's obviously had a checkered history with the team. So the fact that he hasn't even played, that he didn't play for them in this tournament because of the injury, I mean, like I said before, I still think the president was just bitter based on their performance. But looking at that team, they did still have some talent. Not having Suarez was huge because he is the engine that makes their attack go. And obviously Cavani wasn't doing anything to really help them in his absence. But outside of Uruguay, I mean, like you said, the opening couple games, the USA-Colombia game to start, the second game in Group A, Costa Rica-Paraguay, they were a little bit slow. But after that, you really saw all these teams came out ready to play. And you've gotten a bunch of really good games in this tournament. And it really was a good start to this summer of soccer.
Yeah, it really was. And, of course, we'll see what happens with the final on Sunday at MetLife Stadium, which will be on Fox Sports 1. And, of course, they'll have their pre-game coverage kicking off around 6 o'clock, 6:30 Eastern time. 8 o'clock is the start of the final. And, of course, they are claiming, or they're saying, 11 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Central. They're going to restart this match to start the second half. And we'll see what happens, because at the moment Chile has a 2-0 lead on Colombia. Let me just say this, and we've already said this, obviously, that Chile is on the front foot. They're on the gas pedal hard. And were you surprised that Colombia allowed them to get those two goals so quickly? Because we know Colombia probably wanted to have a better start than what Chile showed at the moment.
That's the thing, though. I don't know if they necessarily allowed them to do that. I just think Chile is that good. I mean, you're talking about a team that is playing without Arturo Vidal tonight, and it doesn't even seem like they're skipping a beat. And for me, he's probably been the player of the tournament for Chile, at least. So the fact that they can continue to have this dominance in the attack and look so sound defensively without Vidal, who, I mean, he's known for being a two-way player, but I don't think he always gets the credit that he deserves, because I think he is one of the best all-around midfielders in soccer. So not having him tonight just shows what a really talented team Chile has. And it's not like Colombia is a pushover. They've got a fantastic group of guys too, and they just haven't been able to break down the Chileans the way they'd like to.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And we just have to see, hopefully, if Chile is going to oblige and get another goal or two to keep on going here, and maybe we get the dream final, hopefully, that we all want to see, Argentina versus Chile. So we'll see what happens. And once again, it's just a situation where we need to see what Chile can do, or maybe we'll see what Colombia can do if they can come back into this match and try to find a way to you know, level the score or pull one back and, you know, make it as early as possible if they can get that big goal. Because if Chile gets a third, it's game over and the lights are out. Let's go back to last night. Obviously, a lot of pundits were not, shall I say, happy that the United States lost the way they did, Alexi Lalas.
I don't think he was the only one.
No, he was not the only one, but I like Fernando Fiore, because he was like, look, you had to expect this was going to happen. And
yeah.
Let me just say this before you comment. You know, before the match started, I said on Twitter that if the USA gets blitzed and it's a goal fest for Argentina, no one should be that disappointed, because we all know, and it's not like we're trying to knock the national team down two pegs or three. I think we all recognize that Argentina is one of the best sides in international soccer. They are, you know, head to toe, without a doubt, stacked with so many talented players that their bench players could be in that starting 11. So, you know, seeing the reaction I saw from many people, they have to understand, you know, look, our national team has improved, but I think they're not at the level where Argentina is. I don't think they're at the level where Germany is. They're definitely not at the level where Brazil is. And unfortunately, it's the way they played this match that they were defeated before the opening whistle blew. Your thoughts?
I can't really disagree with anything you just said, because this is the same thing that I've been saying for as long as I've been following this national team. You don't have to even compare them to Argentina. You can compare them to someone that's been within the Confederation for forever in Mexico, who's obviously the USA's biggest rival. I don't see the U.S. being that much better than Mexico. I don't see them being that much better than a lot of these South American teams outside of Argentina and Chile. You saw it in the first game against Colombia. They're obviously ranked in the top 10 in the world. They're a fantastic team, but they're not Argentina. And the USA still struggled really heavily with them in that opening game. We could obviously see that matchup again on Saturday, so I'd like to see how the U.S. deals with that. But I think the U.S. is still a developing soccer nation, and I think that whether it's national pride or just the fact that we tend to be the best as Americans in most other sports, and people just assume that's going to be the same way with soccer, but that's just not the case. The U.S. doesn't have the players that Argentina does. Argentina had a bench full of guys last night that could have probably gone out and still beaten the USA, and that's just fact. When you have a guy like Sergio Aguero, who they were talking about on the broadcast, who was third in the EPL in goals last season and didn't even see a sniff of the field, that just shows what a talented team they have. The USA doesn't have that. They had zero shots, not even on goals. They had zero shots on the night. And that's just, I mean, you can say what you want about the USA back line, because I think they were fantastic in this tournament. I think they were the only thing that really kept them in games outside of Clint Dempsey, because he was fantastic up front. But the USA has a long way to go. And if you look at the team they have right now, yeah, they could have this back line in place for the next 5-6 years. But the attack is going to need to be completely remade, because you're not going to have Clint Dempsey forever. You're not going to have Michael Bradley forever. Beckerman, Zusi, these are all guys that aren't going to be in this team in the foreseeable future. Maybe they'll be at the World Cup, but after that, you're going to have to completely rebuild, and you're going to need to see more of the Christian Pulisic-type players. You're going to need to see more from Giassi Zardes. Jordan Morris is going to come into the picture. But like you were saying before, I completely agree. I think the USA still has a very long way to go, not just with Argentina.
I don't think it's this is what I was going to say here. I think it's more the mentality, Matt, that it's not so much it's MLS that's failing our American players. I don't think that's the case anymore. But I believe that for our American players to be successful, not just our goalkeepers and not just our defenders and not just the defensive midfielders, but our attacking players and creative players need to shine in Europe. And, you know, Pulisic so far is the only shining example, as Borussia Dortmund gave him an opportunity and he's run away with it. And, you know, I'm not saying he should start right away. Whatever Dortmund wants to do for him, then, you know, let it be gradual, because he has plenty in front of him to worry about, you know, being the future of the national team. We've seen so many prodigies or so-called prodigies for the national team, like Freddie Adu, like Juan Agudelo, and a few others, and they failed. And it's not because of technical ability. It's about mentality. And I've always said this about our young players. It's not about do they have the tech, that, you know, the quality and the technical quality out on the field. It's what's in between their ears. And I think that's been sorely lacking until Pulisic comes into play. And, you know, maybe the future now are MLS clubs developing players. I mean, you know, I know you go back and forth with New York City FC at Yankee Stadium, the New York Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena. I mean, we've seen so far Bill Yu, we've seen Alex Mule, Connor Lade. You know, we've seen a handful of young kids, even Sean Davis for the Red Bulls, that is, you know, a future for the club. But the bigger question will be, will they be considered the future for the national team? Because that's the bigger question, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of good points. And I just want to talk about the Red Bulls real quick and the way that they've kind of developed their team. I've said this for a little while now, since the beginning of last year when Jesse Marsh came into the picture. The way that the Red Bulls are building up their academy system is the way that every MLS team should be. If you look at them, if you look at FC Dallas, even the LA Galaxy, these are all academies that are consistently belting out talents. And you're not always going to get a winner. You're not always going to get a Matt Miazga that you can ship off to Chelsea the next season. But if you can do that with 5-6 players every couple of years, then you'll be able to throw those guys into the national team mix. You won't always get a star like Messi because those are once-in-a-generation players. But if the USA continues to do that within the academy system and they continue to build up these academies like the Red Bulls have, you're going to have more options. And that's the biggest thing with our team right now. We just don't have the options that these other countries do. If Brazil doesn't have a good player, they can toss them aside and then pick up another one. That's just fact. That's just what they do. They have a culture that's built on moving on to the next one and seeing what they can do. And then if they don't show up, they'll just move on to the next player. But as far as sending players to Europe goes, I've always been a proponent of that. And that's why I really don't understand why Klinsmann gets so much slack in that respect, because I think you should be challenging these guys to play at the highest level. Everyone knows that MLS isn't the highest level, and it's not knocking the league because it's improved drastically since I started following it. And there's just a huge difference between England, Spain, all these top leagues in Europe and the MLS. And I think you see the difference within the players on the national team that play in those leagues. If you look at the current team, the team that they put out at this Copa America, who have the best players been? It's been the defenders. And where do they all play? They all play in Europe. They're all playing these top teams consistently. They're playing the top players. Outside of Clint Dempsey, who used to play in Europe, he made his name in Europe. He came back to the Sounders because he wanted to come back to the USA and try to build up MLS. But he made his name at Tottenham and Fulham, and he was playing these top teams too. DeAndre Yedlin is a prime example. Had he not gone to Tottenham and then out on loan to Sunderland, I'm not sure he'd be this type of player. He's completely learned a new position in less than 6 months, and he's been absolutely fantastic. He's become one of the best players that the U.S. has. So I think that a lot of the Klinsmann hate that he gets is because he doesn't necessarily respect MLS as much as people think he should. But at the same time, you want to be having these guys play in England. I don't think anyone would say if you're going to have a guy playing at Manchester United or Manchester City over the Red Bulls or even NYCFC, I don't think you're going to have anybody that upset. It's just the fact that he sent a couple guys over and they haven't panned out, whether it's Jozy Altidore who ended up coming back or someone like that.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, hold on. Excuse me. I think that Michael Bradley coming back as well, I think he's been worse than Jozy. Well, Josie, obviously, because, you know, I'm very disappointed in how he has played.
I think that's more injuries than anything.
That's true, but there's also been a mentality before the injuries. I mean,
definitely,
you remember him?
Definitely.
Remember the red card he got while sitting on the bench playing Toronto?
Yeah,
you know, he gets the red card. Definitely. Yeah, and he gets sent off before he even becomes a substitute. It was like early in the first half, and it's like, you know, what the heck is he doing there, mouthing off to the officials? And, you know, saying the magic word to get the heave-ho.
No, I agree. I think it's funny because I think people forget that he's 25 years old. He's not that old. He should be in the prime of his career right now. Between the mentality issues and the fact that he's failed to stay healthy, he's really been a hindrance to the development of the U.S. because he could have been the forward for – I mean, now he's 25, but he could have been the forward when he started with the team for 10-plus years, and now it just seems like he's going to be eased out of that position as Bobby Wood progresses and Jordan Morris does as well.
And that's the one thing I like about Bobby Wood. The man is fearless on the ball.
He's got a motor. I love watching him.
Oh, my God. I mean, to see him, you know, the late goals he scored back last year in the Netherlands, in Germany, to give the USA late wins. I mean, he's just been unbelievable. And to see him, unfortunately, could you imagine if Bobby Wood actually playing against Argentina in that semifinal? I mean,
oh my God.
I don't know.
I mean, I said he was going to be one of the biggest losses. Yeah. No, I think he's fantastic. And honestly, who he reminds me a lot of is Charlie Davies before the unfortunate accident back in 2009.
Oh,
because
yeah, I know what you mean.
I see a lot of similarities between them, not just the pace, not just the close control. I think they just have that instinct. And I think when you see Charlie play, he still has that, but he's lost a step. And it's not his fault because of what happened to him was absolutely tragic. And I think going into that World Cup in 2010, that was the biggest – it was probably the worst thing you could ever imagine for that team, because I think when you look at Jose Altidore too, that was the best when he was ever playing, was when he was paired with Charlie Davies.
Yep.
And when you watch them beat Spain at the Confederations Cup, the team was just clicking on all cylinders and they had their team locked in. That was the team that was going to be playing at the World Cup, but then changes had to be made up front and they made changes elsewhere too. But getting back to Wood, yeah, I'm really happy to see him go into the Bundesliga now. I think that he proves, because I hear people say this sometimes, that size matters as a forward, and I don't buy that with any position on the field, because you and I watch the Red Bulls play every week, and I see Connor Lade out there, and he does not stop. Bobby Wood is the same exact way. He goes up against guys that are 5-6 inches taller than him, he'll out-muscle them, he'll outrun them, and he'll still find a way to score. I think he's a huge prospect, and I think he's going to be fantastic for them in the future.
You are absolutely correct there, Mr. Reed. So finally, when this match resumes on Fox Sports 1, what are we going to see here? And it looks like everyone's back in their seats, and they're going to resume it. They're saying 11:25 p.m. Eastern time now to get the players back out there. But in your mind, what do we see? What does Chile need to do? What does Colombia need to do?
I think Colombia needs, like I was saying before, I think they need to have that same intensity that they closed the half with. I'm not sure if that's feasible because of how long they've been sitting out now. I mean, for both teams, it's going to be difficult getting back into the game, but I think Chile definitely benefits being up 2 goals, and the fact that Colombia had to sit on this now, they're the one that has to be the aggressor. They obviously have the players. I know Carlos Bacca is on the bench, so he's an option who can come on immediately and make an impact, but for Chile, they just have to continue doing what they're doing. I mean, they keep possession very well. They have the players that can kind of kill the clock on the ball, whether it's Alexi Sanchez. He's very creative with his technical ability. He can draw fouls. And I just don't see any way that Chile blows this. I could be very wrong, but I just think they're made for this competition. They showed it last year, and they're showing it again this year. They're hitting their stride as the tournament progresses. And I think we're going to end up seeing Columbia USA in the third place game and a rematch of the final.
All right. So, Matt, thank you again. I will see you July 3rd at Yankee Stadium. We're going to have some more fun with that one, I know. And thanks again, and I'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good, Dave.
All right. That's Matt Reed of Soccer by Ives, as well as NBC Sports Soccer. Go to NBCSports.com and go to their soccer tab to check out Matt Reed's writings. Also, if you want to follow him on Twitter, it is at Matt Reed Football, FUTBOL. So 11:25 p.m. will be the restart. I'll be keeping a close eye on that one. But at the moment, the New York Red Bulls are at Real Salt Lake taking on RSL, and they lead 1-0 by Gideon Ba. So thank you very much. Talk to you guys next time, and please enjoy your football. Bye-bye now. Take care. So long.